Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Quincy on the Law. My name is Quincy, and we're here for the third episode of our newly established podcast. Now, the time is 6:44 a.m., and the date is the 21st of April, 2022. The topic of the day is still the topic that we started with. This is the presidential immunity as provided for under Kenyan law. So, no discourse on presidential immunity is complete without an analysis of the BBI decisions. This is the decision of the High Court, the decision of the Court of Appeal, and the decision of the Supreme Court, insofar as what they said about presidential immunity. In this episode, we're going to look at what the High Court said, and we're going to look at what the Court of Appeal said, and we're going to look at what the Supreme Court said in another episode. But in this episode, we're going to look at the High Court and the Court of Appeal. So let's begin with the High Court. For the avoidance of doubt, the citation of the case was David D and others versus the Attorney General and others. It was petition E-282 of 2020, as consolidated with about five or six other petitions. It can be found online on EKLR. So, in this matter, it was the petitioner's argument that while it is true that the president cannot, during his tenure as the president, be validly sued, whether in his official or personal capacities, in respect of anything done or not done in exercise of their powers under the Constitution, he is not so insulated from court proceedings in respect of actions or omissions that are outside the Constitution. The petitioners claim that Article 140, Subarticle 1, Article 142, Subarticle 1, and Article 136, Subarticle 2, Subarticle A, demonstrate circumstances under which the president may be sued while in office. You may look at that to see if indeed those arguments held merit. However, there was a decision that was decided before the BBI case. This was the case of Isaac Aluoch Polo Aluocher versus Uhuru Muigai Kenyatta and another, 2016 EKLR. In this case, it was held that the president could indeed be sued for conduct that is outside the exercise of presidential authority. You see, a violation of the Constitution means that the president acts beyond the authority given to him by the Constitution. The petitioners in that case urged that if the presidency violates the Constitution in particular and the rule of law generally, then the Constitution is not left helpless. It provides a remedy. For instance, judicial review remedies can lie against an order of appointment made by a sitting president in contravention of the rule of law. You see, JR, judicial review, is a public law remedy that will be directed to the state in itself if, in making the appointment, the president purported to exercise the executive authority of the state. A narrow and strict interpretation of Article 143 of the Constitution would certainly offend Article 259, which demands a purposive interpretation in order to give effect to the objects, purposes, and values of the Constitution. If we look at Article 73 of the Constitution, authority is assigned to a state officer. The authority assigned to a state officer is a public trust, and for this reason, the executive has a responsibility to serve the people rather than rule them. It is worth re-emphasis that a strict interpretation of Article 143 of the Constitution, without regard to the objects, values, purposes, and spirit of the Constitution, as was suggested by the respondents and particularly the Attorney General in the case, would thus deprive the public the right to demand for public answerability from the office of the president on the exercise of sovereign authority in which the people themselves have delegated to the executive. And this would create an absurd state of affairs where the people cannot question whatever is being done by the presidency. Now, a plain reading of Article 143 reveals the following things. 1. Criminal proceedings cannot be taken against the President of the Republic of Kenya during his tenure as President. 2. As far as civil proceedings are concerned, the President cannot be sued during his tenure if whatever he is sued for is something done or not done in the exercise of the powers he is clothed with by the Constitution. 3. Where proceedings, whether criminal or civil, that may be taken against the President after his tenure are subject to the limitation period, time does not run until the expiration of his tenure. 4. The president may be prosecuted during his tenure if the crime for which he is prosecuted is defined by a treaty to which Kenya is a party and which prohibits immunity from prosecution. In the Isaac Polo Alwocher v. Uhuru Muigai Kenyatta and another case, in which Mr. Uhuru Muigai Kenyatta had been sued together with his deputy William Ruto in their personal capacities, that court held that the Attorney General cannot represent the President whenever the latter is sued in his personal capacity. Building on that case, the petitioner now in this BBI case at the High Court wanted the court to make a specific finding that civil court proceedings can be instituted against the president or a person performing the functions of the office of the president during the tenure of office in respect of anything done or not done in the exercise of claimed powers beyond those authorized under the Constitution. That is, for actions or omissions not authorized under the Constitution. It was the petitioner's view that where the president acts or omits to act in contravention of the Constitution, then he can not only be personally sued, but he should also be held personally responsible for any loss that may have ensued as a result of his action or inaction. You see, the petitioner's action was based on what they believed to be a violation of the Constitution by the president, and the court was of the opinion that there would be no better means through which their grievances can be addressed other than through a constitutional petition, such as the one that was presented before the High Court. The court noted that owing to the history of the proceedings, if the matter would have taken a judicial review route, then the petitioners would have been limited in the nature of the reliefs that the court could have granted them. It was apparent that from Article 43, Sub-Article 3, the president or any other person holding that office is only protected from such actions in respect of anything done or not done in the exercise of their powers under the Constitution. On that point, the court rightfully agreed with the petitioners, and the rationale for agreeing is simple to see. Assuming in his tenure, the president embarks on a mission that is not only clearly in violation of the Constitution, but is also destructive to the nation, would it not be prudent that he should be stopped in his tracks rather than wait until the lapse of his tenure, by which time the country may have tipped over the cliff? In such circumstances, any person may invoke the jurisdiction of the court by suing the president, whether in his personal or in his official capacity. Whichever capacity is sued may very well depend on the nature of the violation or threatened violation, and will certainly depend on the circumstances of each particular case. The High Court concluded by stating that a person holding the office of the presidency is only protected from such action in respect of anything done or not done in the exercise of his powers under the Constitution, and depending on the nature of the violation or threatened violation and circumstances of each particular case. Now, when this decision was delivered, there was an outro from the executive. There was an outro from the political scene. It was just crazy. And they immediately filed an appeal. So we will simply move on to what the Court of Appeal said in as far as what presidential immunity constitutes in our jurisdiction. Now, before we begin with the issues of the appeal, do you recall that, was it the first or second episode where I asked a question, can the president be sued for actions committed before he assumed office? That was just a trick question. The question was just very, really straightforward. However, I found a decision that addressed the question, gave the question sharp focus, rather. Now, in Kenya Human Rights Commission and another versus the Attorney General and 6 of the 2019 Court of Appeal, the court held that, in effect, a plain and ordinary interpretation of Article 143.2 would infer that the president's immunity is limited, 1, to proceedings instituted during his or her term in office, and 2, to anything done or not done in exercise of the president's powers under the Constitution. Put differently, The immunity does not extend to acts or omissions that have resulted in civil proceedings commenced prior to assumption of the office of the president, or that were not in exercise of the president's powers. So I think we've answered that question. So let's move on to what the Court of Appeal bench said. I'll try to analyze it, judge after judge. We can start with Justice Nambuye. Justice Nambuye held that insofar as the litigation resulting in this appeal resulted from the handshake that was between the president and Honorable Raila Odinga, which culminated into the now vitiated BBI process, she found that whatever the president did with regard thereto, in her view, was pursuant to his official function as the president. He could therefore not be sued in his personal capacity. And on that ground, the petition rightfully stood vitiated. Now, we move on to Justice Okwengu. Justice Okwengu did a comparative analysis of the position of presidential immunity in several other jurisdictions and found that the concept of presidential immunity is not a concept unique to Kenya, even though the extent of immunity may differ from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. So for Her Ladyship Justice Okwengu, she did a comparative analysis of the position in several other jurisdictions. She found that the concept of presidential immunity is not unique to Kenya, even though the extent of its applicability or application differs from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. Her reading of Article 143 of the Constitution showed that the president can be sued during his tenure for acts which are not done in the pursuance of his constitutional duties. She held that this is a departure from Section 14 of the repealed Constitution that provided for absolute presidential immunity. A comparison of Article 143 of the current Constitution and Section 14 of the repealed Constitution reveals that whereas the repealed Constitution provided for immunity for anything done or omitted to be done by the President, which would include official and unofficial acts, the current Constitution only provides immunity for anything done or not done by the President in exercise of constitutional powers, thereby covering only official acts or omissions, leaving the president open to civil proceedings during the term of his office for unofficial acts or acts not consistent with the exercise of his constitutional powers. And for those aforesaid reasons, the judge was in agreement with the findings of the learned judges of the High Court, where they said that the president is subject to civil proceedings during the tenure of his office whenever he acts outside the parameters of the Constitution or omits to do that which he is bound to do under the Constitution. The next judge's decision that I looked at is His Lordship Justice Kiage. He took issue with the arguments by the respondents when they were saying that the only means available for the president to for a person to seek redress as against the president is to call for an impeachment. When seeking clarity, he asked from counsel, "What if he was a neighbor to the president, and one day the president's dog strayed into his compound and beat his child? What recourse would be open to him?" It was counsel's confounding answer that the only recourse open to the neighbor was to seek impeachment of the president. The court held that he cannot be right, not least because there is nothing presidential about such canine indiscretions that would invite tortious liability only. Counsel drew attention to Article 165 of the Constitution that provides for immunity from action in respect of anything done or omitted to be done in good faith, and the lawful performance of judicial function, to make the point too that the president is clothed with functional immunity. The judge held that his reading of the article conveys these inescapable. His reading of Article 143 in harmony with Article 165 conveys these inescapable points with regards to the president, which also applies to an acting president during his tenure. One, the president is immunized completely against criminal proceedings in Kenya. Two, the president is during his tenure immunized from civil proceedings in Kenya in respect of any act or omission in the exercise of his powers under the Constitution. 3. The period of the president's tenure in office shall be excluded in reckoning the statutory limitation periods for filing suit against him. D. 4. Rather, the presidential immunity under the article does not extend to international crimes under a treaty prohibiting immunity. So, the president is immune from criminal prosecution and from civil suit for any act or omission in excess of his powers under the Constitution in Kenyan courts during his tenure of office, but may be sued for acts or omissions outside his constitutional duties and prosecuted for international crimes where the treaty establishing them does not recognize the defense of immunity. That must mean that for any acts or omissions that are outside, inconsistent with, or in violation of the powers spelled out in the Constitution, the president is, as it were, on his own and cannot benefit from the cloak of immunity that is designed to protect his constitutional functions. Absolute immunity, which existed under Section 14 of the retired Constitution, appears to be an anachronism and an oxymoron in the context of a constitutional democracy such as Kenya. That was the wisdom from His Lordship, Justice Kiage. Justice Gatembu Kairu concluded also that the president can be sued in his personal capacity for acts that are outside the Constitution. However, on the issue, there seems to have been a dissenting opinion from His Lordship Tuyot, who drew from American decisions wherein the court had distinguished official duties from unofficial duties. He held that it is not controversial that when a sitting president acts in a purely personal capacity, then civil action can be brought against him, notwithstanding that he holds office. The rationale being that the president, like any other citizen, must be held responsible for personal conduct. The president does not enjoy heightened protection of Section 14 of the previous Constitution, which provided for absolute immunity to a sitting president, even in regard to personal conduct. There will be acts or omissions which a sitting president may do or not do in the name of or under the insignia of office, but which are outside or in direct contravention of the powers donated to the president by the Constitution. For those acts or omissions, the president enjoys protection from civil litigation only while in office. At the end of the term, such conduct can be brought under scrutiny in civil litigation. This is, in this way, an ex-president or former president can be personally held to account for acts or omissions done or not done in the guise of official function, but which are an affront to or not authorized by the Constitution. There is difficulty in reconciling the purpose of provisions of Article 143, Sub-Article 3, with interpreting the scope of Article 43, Sub-Article 2, as anything less than providing functional protection to the president, that is, protection that is predicated on the functions of the president's office. Look, the president wields executive power on behalf of the people. The extent of that power is prescribed and demarcated by the Constitution and national legislation. Those two identify the responsibilities assigned to that high office. The expectation is that the president will act within the dictates of the law and in good faith. Mistakes, wrongs, or indiscretions committed in the bona fide, well-intended, and legitimate exercise of presidential power and authority should not give rise to personal liability on the part of the president, during and even after he or she ceases to hold office. On the other hand, official acts or omissions driven by bad faith, motives ulterior to the Constitution, or in deliberate disregard or contravention of the Constitution, of the law receives transient protection, immunity, that lasts only while the president holds office. To hold otherwise would make an inquiry into the constitutionality of an act or omission a basis for affording protection under Article 143.2. If that was so, then any person unhappy with the official conduct of the president can sue him in his personal capacity, alleging a violation of the Constitution. there is the possibility that a sitting president will be inundated and distracted in defending such actions as alluded to by the Supreme Court of the United States in Nixon versus Fitzgerald. So in conclusion, His Lordship Justice Tuyot concluded as follows, that immunity does not extend to acts or omissions of a sitting president done in a purely personal capacity not connected with his office. 2, the immunity is only in respect to acts or omissions connected with the office and functions of that office. 3, where an action or inaction or inaction/omission is in an official capacity but bereft of any constitutional authority or power whatsoever, or is in fact done in gross or serious violation of the Constitution, then it is actionable against the president in person, but only after he leaves office. 4, for acts and omissions falling under 3 above, and which must be questioned or challenged immediately, the president can be sued not in his personal name, but through the Attorney General. So that was just an analysis of what some of the judges said in the High Court, in the Court of Appeal. It is worthy to state that a majority of the judges of the Court of Appeal actually agreed with the High Court, setting the stage for a gigantic legal battle at the Supreme Court. So in our next episode, we will be looking at what the Supreme Court said in terms of presidential immunity only. I hope you learned a lot and enjoyed this episode. Please subscribe for more. This is Quincy, and remember, this is Quincy on the Law.